I identified the four biggest dating myths that I see tripping my clients up. I identified which myth was the most prevalent for each phase of the dating process. When I'm coaching a client, I look at dating as this sort of continuum. We begin with mindset, then we move into the search. Where are you finding people to date? Then we move into the date. How are you actually showing up in the date? And then we move to the future.
This is episode number 606 with Damona Hoffman. I am so excited to have a conversation with her about breaking free of dating myths that keep you from love. I am Sandy Weiner. Welcome back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you on your journey to lasting love, I have written two books. The first is Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. This book is for you if you have ever played small to make other people comfortable, if you've ever stayed quiet when you had something important to say, or if you have ever stayed in a bad relationship or a job too long because you didn't think that you could do better. The second book is called Choice Points in Dating, and I wrote this book to show you all the choices you have, from how to think about dating, to how to choose a partner, to how to date online, offline, how to know if you should stay or go, and how to go on your last first date. Both of them are on Amazon for Kindle or paperback, and Choice Points is now available as an audiobook. This week's tip on Becoming a Woman of Value from the Woman of Value book is step number 13, do not settle. I've settled, you probably have settled as well, whether it's a job or in a partnership. When we settle and we are not clear about what we need and want in life, we are unhappy. Things will come up and make us unhappy. It's not a good place to be. And so my challenge to you this week is, if you are settling in some part of your life because you don't feel you're worthy of more or that you can do better, take a deep breath and just go for what you want, because that's the only way you're going to get it. Before I bring Damona on, I want to invite you to join my Facebook group if you're not yet a member. It's called Your Last First Date. And we are a group for women over 40 who want to do better in their relationships and in their dating lives and in their lives in general. We are a very unique group out there because most groups are not monitored. My group has seven amazing monitors who are wise. I'm on that group every single day, and I do live videos there. I post articles there. There's so much good information and support. We are about positive growth. So if you're interested, please join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Damona Hoffman. She is a regular cast member of The Drew Barrymore Show and a frequent contributor to NPR, The Washington Post, LA Times, Access Hollywood, and so much more. Her podcast, Dates and Mates, was named Podcast of the Year at the Black Podcasting Awards in 2022, and I am honored to have been a guest. Damona's first book, F the Fairy Tale, was released in January 2nd, 2024. She lives in LA with her husband and her two children. Damona Hoffman, I am so excited to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Nice to see you, Sandy. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about your book, F the Fairy Tale. Fantastic book, doing really well. Tell us why you decided to write it, and what do you hope people will take away from the book?
You know, I've been in the game for a while, Sandy, as you have. I've been doing my podcast for 11 years. I've been coaching singles for over, I think, 17 years now. And I really felt like we were at this inflection point. We were at a point where dating was changing faster than our understanding of dating was changing. And I really felt a lot of frustration from my clients and listeners about the state of dating today. And I felt like I needed to address that moment by helping people understand how we got here, but then also giving a hopeful roadmap to navigate people to the future of dating and know that they have the power to write their own love stories, to design their own dating plans, to date in their way, instead of letting the machine, the fairy tale machine, take over and push us to a place where dating was no longer interesting, fun. It was something that created, it's something that I feel like creates a lot of dissonance in people's lives. And ultimately, human connection is the thing that should bring us the most joy. It's one of the most important things. And so that's why I wrote F the Fairy Tale, to address this current moment.
Yeah, it's gone off the rails. I mean, there have been so many articles recently about how the younger people are not going on dating apps anymore. People don't know how to communicate anymore with texting. There's such a lack of connection. And then we had COVID in the middle of all that, that distanced everybody except for the people who decided to date during COVID, which I highly recommended. And I think that we just need to really get off that fairy tale wagon. It steered us so wrong. I remember hearing you recently talking to, I think on the Dateable podcast, about the Little Mermaid. Was that one?
Yes.
That was like, oh my God. Talk about that a little bit, because that's like so awful.
Well, I have two kids and I'm now re-experiencing the fairy tales along with them. And when you look back with the clarity and information that you have as a dating coach of all these years, it hits different, Sandy. It is so like looking at when you really dissect the Little Mermaid, which when I was a kid was one of my favorite fairy tales. I was like, oh, isn't this beautiful? And she gets to live in this castle and she's marrying the prince. And isn't that fantastic? And then you really look at, what did she sacrifice for that? She gave up her voice. She gave up her family. She left her whole life behind so that she could be a part of his world. And I'm like, what did he do? He did nothing. He didn't transform. He didn't, you know, he didn't have a grand realization. And that just socked me in the gut, really, in so many of the fairy tales. And it's not even just fairy tales. It's rom-coms. It's stories from our friends and family and parents and grandparents that make us believe it's supposed to look and feel a certain way. And then when it doesn't happen that way, we think, oh, this is wrong, or this isn't my person, or this, you know, all of these myths and tales and stories that we have heard for so long, we've come to believe that they're true when maybe they were true at a certain point, but they're not true right now.
Mm-hmm. So true. So true that that's not true. And I, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking we need to reframe love. I think we think of love as romance. We think of it as big gestures. We think of it as like wining and dining and courting, and that never stops. And people are shocked when all of that is gone and we live day to day with somebody. So tell us the dating myths that you write about in F the Fairy Tale.
Yeah. And I just want to clarify that when I say F the Fairy Tale, I'm not saying you can't have romance. I'm not saying that you can't have a successful relationship. I'm saying put aside somebody else's story and write your own. The subtitle is Rewrite the Dating Myths and Live Your Own Love Story. And that's really the core of the book. So I identified the four biggest dating myths that I see tripping my clients up and that I hear as dating frustrations for a lot of them. And I identified which myth was the most prevalent for each phase of the dating process. When I'm coaching a client, I look at dating as this sort of continuum, and we begin always in the same place. We begin with mindset. Then we move into the search. Where are you finding people to date? Then we move into the date. How are you actually showing up in the date? And then we move to the future. And each of these phases relies on the clarity that you've gotten in the phase before. So you don't get to the future if you're still in the mindset work. And the myth that I associated with the mindset phase was the list myth. I'm sure you see this as well, Sandy. Mm-hmm. We come in with a list a mile long of all of, it's a checklist of all the things like must be this tall, must make this much money, must live in this radius, 5 mile radius of my house. You know, we have all of these, you know, bullet points on a list. And again, I'm not saying don't have a list. I'm just saying, let's really peek underneath all of those things that you put on the list and see how well they really add up to the relationship that you want. And that's why in the book, I've also offered a pillar of long-term compatibility that I've seen consistently show up in the relationships that I've helped people form over the last 17 years. And the pillar that we have to start with is the relationship goals. Let's just first begin. I don't care how tall he is. I don't care how much money he makes. Let's just first begin with, are you both invested in the same kind of relationship? Are you headed in the same direction? I can take you through all of the myths, but
well, let's do one at a time. So
we'll do one at a time.
Yeah, I that whole thing of what we want is so important. And if we're both aligned, and not everybody's honest, right? So some people will say, I'm looking for a girlfriend, I'm looking for a boyfriend, but they're not behaving like they're looking for either one of those things. And so we also have to watch their actions and whether they act like boyfriend, girlfriend, right? So what would you say if somebody says they have the same goal, but they behave differently?
Well, I look for alignment between words and actions, always, always. But then that's just the beginning phase. You know, this is like before we even get into, this is really more, this is the mindset phase. So this is more about the target that you are looking for. Mm. And then as we start to get into the search, that's when you get met with the next myth. And this is the rules. This is, I'm supposed to say this, and then they'll do this. And we're all looking for a hack, right? We're looking for a shortcut. And really, that's where we need to identify our values. And those two pillars are really key to identify before you even get to the date. Because once you get to the date, then you start to make the story fit. And as you were saying, well, they're telling you one thing, but they're doing another thing. But then we make an excuse for it because we want to get to the end of the fairy tale. It's not our faults. Our brains are wired for stories, and we're wired to get to the end, to want to get to the end of the story and to complete this end of the story if we don't know. But when you start from a place of absolute clarity, it's a lot easier to know on a deep level whether something is a fit or not, because the, you know, talk is cheap. And all those words that they say, if they don't align with their actions, they are worth nothing.
Absolutely. We all function according to our own rules, right? We think that everybody does this, and so they should do this too. Or we listen to people who make up rules, and we think these are the rules of dating, which when I first started this work, working with people over 40, I found a lot of people stuck in the rule of men chase and women need to be pursued. And yeah, I see you rolling your eyes there. And I feel the same. It's like we then become passive. We don't ask for what we want. We don't communicate well. We make these assumptions, which are really getting in the way of love.
100%, Sandy. And I rolled my eyes. Because I'm a feminist. I'm a feminist dating coach. And the true, I know some people just bristled at that and were like, oh, feminist. The true meaning of the word feminist is really about equity, that genders are equal. They're not the same, but they are equal. And we have made such tremendous strides in equity. And when you really think back to the origin of relationship. What is the purpose of relationships in the first place? I mean, one for procreation, obviously, but also that women didn't have the ability to have our own careers. We didn't have the ability to have our own mortgage until 1974. Like, when you think about that, that's not that long ago. No. And we would have to compromise what some of what we wanted in our lives to just have safety and security, one of our most basic needs. Now we don't need that. So we've changed one really key part of the equation. And yet we expect the rest of the computation to remain the same. Well, we don't need a partner for our livelihood now. We are, and then the shift of that became, and then we have to also consider, I know a lot of your listeners are not in the place of having children, but having birth control, this is all happening at the same time. Being able to delay starting a family, being able to delay getting married, which has been since about 1974, has been the age of first marriage has been steadily increasing. That to me says women have more choice. We have been taking more choice. And therefore, the role of relationships has changed. So now we've shifted more to a love marriage than a partnership, a, you know, financial security arrangement. And yet we're still holding on to some of these relics of what relationships stood for in the past. So I'm just asking everybody to just, let's do the rest of the computation. Let's, you know, let's just figure out if we want equity in one area of our lives, what would equity look like then in our relationships and in dating?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think people don't really consider that. They think, well, I want everything. I want him to chase me and pay for me. And I also want to be treated with respect and again, unspoken rules. And so my thing is also like, if you enjoy when a man pays for you, let him know that you really like to be cared for in this way, you know, or you could say, I really appreciate that you paid and I can pay next time, or pay when you're in a relationship, it becomes more equitable. I don't know. I mean, everybody has to figure it out for themselves, but I don't think it lowers your value if you have more equity. I think that that's what people have to really rethink.
Completely. And just even this idea around gender roles of what should happen, what is how it's supposed to go. We've completely rewritten the foundation of relationships. So there really is no supposed to anymore. And the other element that has shifted so dramatically, and I'm sure you've seen this in your work too, Sandy, the speed of dating and the volume of dating have changed dramatically, predominantly thanks to dating apps, but also social media. Also just we live our lives in a different way. We're dating less in just our local community. And when we do that, we are having a lot more interactions than we had before. And I used to be a little bit still old fashioned, I guess, on the who pays for the first date and, you know, all that. But I've had to adapt. Like, I've been doing this a long time, so I've had to adapt my philosophies as a dating coach along with the changing norms in dating as well. And I realized that, like, if you're going on, some of my clients are going on, like, you know, two or even three dates a week, which blows my mind, because when I started doing this work 17 years ago, most people literally had been on maybe two dates a year. And if I could get them to a date a month, we were doing great. And now people feel like if they're not going on two dates a week, that they are a failure and that dating apps don't work, that they don't work, that it's hopeless and love will never happen for them. But when you're on that many dates and you're having that many interactions, you brought up texting briefly a moment ago, and that's something I really do want to talk about. Mm-hmm. But it's changed the way we're interacting with people. And then it also changes the dynamic when you're on a date and you're, you know, people are going on two dates a week and they're paying for all of them. That's like actually a really huge expense that in a time when, you know, there's a lot of financial insecurity as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and we don't have to go on expensive dates either, but we have to really consider that's a lot. Two or three dates a week. First of all, my brain would explode. I don't know how you keep track of anyone, if especially if you're going on two dates with two different people. Is that what you're talking about? Like,
yeah,
these are first dates.
A lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And look, I did it, Sandy. Like before, we didn't really talk about my origin story, but
yeah, I'm going to get to that. I really want to hear about that.
I do this because I was once in the shoes of many of your listeners and many of the daters that I work with. And I was at the point where I was going on probably two dates a week before I met my husband online. And I really looked at dating as a lot of those dates were sort of just skill building. I look at dating as a set of learned skills. And the more that I did it, the better that I got at it. But I didn't put as much emphasis into each and in every individual date. Because if you're only having two dates a year, then you're like, you have a lot of expectation wrapped up in those two dates. Mm-hmm. If you are like, I'm just meeting people, let's see. And it doesn't have to be two dates a week, but whatever is your, what I do with clients is I figure out where's your baseline right now? What would be additive for you? And for some people, for a lot of people, two dates a week is too much. It is no longer additive to your life because when you look at what it takes to get to that point of two dates a week, that's two dates and 75 text messages, you know, and, you know, 150 swipes. And it's a lot. And our brains aren't really wired for that just yet. So it's become overwhelming. And that's where the dating anxiety comes up.
Yeah. And again, when we talk about rules, a lot of people think that we have to only date one person at a time, or we can only date three people at a time, or we should put all our eggs in one basket. Like, these are all random rules that have nothing to do with what you can handle. So you were going on two dates a week because they were skill building and because it also helped you to be a little bit lighter about the whole dating thing instead of feeling anxious or feeling like, I hope he's the one, or whatever it is that we bring to dating. And I think, again, we have to know ourselves. Let's get into the values again. I wanted to go back to that for a minute because I think a lot of people are confused about how to find their values. Because I remember in coaching school, like when they said, what are your core values? It was like, nobody ever asked me that before. And I kind of lived my life for other people until that point. So I had no idea. How do you help people identify their values?
Well, very conveniently, I have an exercise, an F the fairy tale, where I help people order their values. And I said, if we can look for, you know, your values really show up in the things that you invest your time, your money, your, you know, emotion into. And usually they line up along certain categories. So, you know, in the book, I identify eight different categories, but you can really create your own categories. If you just really look at your calendar and look at how your time is spent, or look at your bank account and look at how your money is spent. What are you spending it on? Are you spending it on investment in your career? Are you spending it on time with family and friends? How do you put your money where your mouth is? How do you put your time where your mouth is? And then when we're dating, we really do want to look for alignment, like in those top two categories, because I find that if it doesn't mean you have to have everything aligned, but if you really value time with your family, And that's something that has to go on your calendar every single week. And then that person doesn't have that same value, and they'd really rather invest that time in their career, then you will get to a point where that feels like a that feels like a strain. And we are always looking for shortcuts on the values. Like, if, oh, well, if I just know, and I used to write for the Washington Post, this matchmaking column called Date Lab, and we would match people on just to go out to dinner. And I would write kind of a he said, she said, they said kind of article. And the political alignment, it was amazing, especially in, you know, in D.C. That was front loaded. Everybody was like, must be the same, must vote the same way that I do, must not at all be a Trump supporter, must be a Trump supporter. You know, it's like very polarizing. And we were looking for shortcuts for values. And I found that as people were, I write about this a little bit in the book, as people were going on dates, they were finding that you could be, you could share one big umbrella label with someone, but that didn't mean that all the way down the value ballot that you were aligned, and people would find mismatches and making the assumption, well, we're both liberals, but then they, you know, we'll always find a way to sort of look for differences. And I'm much more interested in looking for alignments.
Oh, I think that it's such a good point, and it's important to remember. I think about my own marriage, where I had a slight idea about what I needed, but not clear. And at the time, I was an Orthodox observant Jew. I met my husband, who was Orthodox, for about 2 years before we met. And I thought, well, we'll raise our children Orthodox and it'll all be great. Like, that was important to me. That was a big value. Well, the way he observed Orthodoxy was completely different from the way I did. I was more of an intellectual Jew. I had some spiritual side to me, but more about, like, I really loved learning. That's a big part. That's a big value for me. He was not the learner. He was more of the emotional. And so his connection to religion, he would have these like visions that God spoke to him, and then he would tell me these things, and I really thought he was nuts. And so, and that to me is more about worldview than it is about religion in particular. That's the way he sees the world. And it never shifted, and I never was on board with it, because we just went in totally different directions. And when crisis hit, he stopped being religious because he was angry at God. And I found solace in my community and in my religion at the time. And so that really affected our marriage in a big way. So I always tell people, like, if somebody has the same religion as you, that's not enough. You have to really understand what's under the hood. How do they see that religion? What does it mean to them on a daily basis? I mean, you could be completely different religions and have it work if you can respect each other, if one person's not a fanatic or trying to force you to do something you don't want to do. What are your thoughts?
I love that you shared that, Sandy. And yeah, I actually do even give that example in the book, where I say, you know, there's a big difference. You could say I started writing for JDate. That was my first writing opportunity. And there's a big difference between somebody who is Orthodox and somebody who is Reform. And we could both be Jewish, but that looks very, very different. And I even found that sometimes people are carrying somebody else's value or expectation for them. So I would find also some people who would say they had to be with someone Jewish. And I like to unpack that and just say, well, why? Mm-hmm. Because that's just what I'm supposed to do, or that's what my parents want. I'll do this five whys technique that is actually a business technique to get to the core reasoning. And if the core reasoning still holds up after five whys, then I'm like, okay, then that's what we're going to get. But a lot of times through that experience of unpacking our why, and this is why we go back to the list, like, why did you write that? Why did you write 6 foot three? Why, what is the significance of that? Mm-hmm. Let's unpack it. And sometimes we get down to the place where we're like, actually, that is a limiting factor in my dating life. And that is not something that is a deeply held value for me. That is something that is part of a story that isn't actually my story. And then sometimes we can expand the dating pool, because it's like, so many times I've seen this, I'm sure you have too in your work, where the person is just right outside the core criteria that the person has been looking, and they've been doing the same search the same way again and again and again, and they're like, there's nobody out there, there's no one that fits my criteria online at all, which it always kind of makes me giggle. Like, there's nobody attractive on this dating app. Really? There's no one you're attracted to on this dating app. Okay. Then when we start to pull the thread and we change some of these parameters, like what if you are okay with them being, maybe you've always searched for someone who was reform because that's how you grew up. But what if you expanded it to someone who was conservative? And what if the way that you, the role that faith played in your lives was the same, or the way you lived your life was the same, but because of this label that we haven't peeked under, we put a wall up that prevented us from being able to see that person. Yeah. That's what's really interesting about this work to me. And so many times it's like, the person was right there. Like, I've helped so many clients that we just changed one little parameter. Like, we expanded it from 5 miles to 10, or we changed their age range by 2 years, or, you know, we just shifted a couple of these boxes around and the person was right there the whole time.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts, like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer. A lot of people, when it comes to distance, think, well, I don't want to drive that far. And they don't consider the fact that the other person might be able to drive, or that you can meet halfway, or if it really works out, you'll figure it out because it'll be so important to you, or not. Like, you know, but these are the kinds of things I think we have biases that we're not even conscious of that get in the way and keep us stuck.
Yeah. And it's also dictated by our prior experiences too. Like, sometimes people will come in and they'll say, oh, well, I don't, like, I had one client who was like, oh, I don't date nurses. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? It's like, yeah, I've dated a couple nurses, and, you know, there's just like, there was a correlation that he was making between the profession and the two people that he had dated who were nurses, and then extrapolated meaning from that applied to all nurses there. And I was just like, yeah. And I had another client that was like, oh, no, I can't date Michaels.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
My ex-husband was a Michael. My ex-boyfriend was a Michael. I don't date Michaels anymore. And I'm like, okay, wait a minute. This is like your person. There's somebody out there who has everything that you want, who's aligned with you on values, who has the same relationship goals that you're passionately in love with, but his name is Michael, and therefore you can't. That doesn't make sense to me, Sandy. I don't know. But, you know, this is our brain completing stories. Like,
right,
oh,
exactly.
Can't do another Michael. Can't.
I understand that people, right? People have trauma that is not resolved, and so they hear the name. I mean, it. I've heard this so many times too. And I don't date lawyers because the last person I dated was a lawyer. Come on, everybody isn't the same, you know. And it's like, We need to see people as unique individuals. I think this is such an important thing. Like, widowers are not all the same. They didn't all grieve the same way. It's the, you know, widowers are better to date than divorced people. Like, what kind of statement is that? How do you know that? So, yeah.
Yeah. And I really love the process of unpacking that belief. And that's what I lead people to do in F the Fairy Tale as well. It's really about how you want to feel in the relationship. So what you're saying about the resonance of the name is really valid. Like, it's not that there's no good Michaels. It's that that name rings up a bunch of feelings from that are unresolved from that person. That name has an emotional significance. Or, you know, for the person who said that he won't date nurses, I want to get underneath that. Well, what is it about nurses? Well, you know, the 12-hour shifts and that they're working weird hours and that I feel like I can never see them and that I feel like I'm always playing second in the relationship to their career. Ah, now we're getting somewhere, because that's about how you want to feel in the relationship. And that's something then that you can articulate to another person. Like, I really like you, but this is something I've experienced in the past. How can we together address this challenge, need, opportunity?
That requires communication skills.
Ah, well, this is good, Sandy. We're making progress, because that takes us to our third myth and our third pillar.
Okay, which is, tell us.
Third pillar is communication. And that's why we have to get to the date to really see what the communication really is. You can't do it over text. I know we all want the shortcuts, but we covered that in the second myth.
Yeah.
So we can't do the shortcuts. You have to have that. You have to have that real time, synchronous, in-person communication to really know what you're dealing with. And that's why the third myth is the chemistry myth. We want to feel something so badly that we're chasing this idea of chemistry and expecting magic every time we meet someone. And I have found in my work, I'm sure you have too, that real connection develops over time. Real chemistry that can sustain a long-term relationship is not that weak in the knees, the first time I saw you, I couldn't speak, I couldn't breathe, I couldn't think kind of chemistry, because then you're not really communicating. You're just having a visceral, body, your body is reacting to that person, but I'm interested in integrating, you know, the mind, body, and the soul in that chemistry.
Yes, 100%. And so many dating profiles say, I will know it when you walk in the room. I will know her. And if it's not immediate chemistry, it's never going to work. And I totally agree with you that that is terrible. That's a terrible myth. And what is the final myth?
The final myth is the soulmate myth. This is the one that's really the most tied to the fairy tale. We think there's one predestined person out there for us. And if we can just find a needle in a haystack, we'll live happily ever after. And I really want this to be true. I want this for the 70% of Americans who believe in soulmates. But I've seen time and time again that it's not true, that there are many possible combinations out there. There are many possible, quote, soulmates, and that you really have to choose. It's actually a process of choosing your soulmate. You choose your soulmate every day. It's not, it's, and if you're chasing this idea of the one perfect person, it's first of all exhausting. And second of all, it's going to keep you in this place of guessing. Well, wait, I like this person. We really connect. They align with me on my values. We communicate well. We're headed in the same direction. But wait, are they my soulmate? Or it makes us make excuses for, like, well, this person, I really feel that they're my soulmate. I've heard this so many times before. I feel that they're my soulmate. So I'm going to wrap myself into pretzels to make this fit. And it doesn't have to be that. We make it more complicated than it really needs to be.
I agree. You know, my website, Last First Date's tagline used to be from first date to soulmate. And I got rid of it because I didn't like it anymore. And that shows how far I've come also. Now it's hope and confidence to love again. And who knows, I may change it again. But I do believe that it takes skills, it takes confidence in yourself, it takes a level of hope, because if we give up hope, we certainly can't find what we're looking for. But what you said about choosing your partner every day is so important. It's not, we're not crockpots, fix it and forget it. And I think a lot of people date that way, like, if, oh, we're in a relationship now, so we're done. And that's where the work begins. Like, I think people don't realize what a relationship brings up in you, all the old wounds, all the old stuff. And I know somebody who got married at 70 for the second time. And man, is she going through a transformation. She's back in therapy. She's just like, oh my God, I'm learning a lot. I said, yeah, you've transformed because all this stuff that's been brewing, you're finally facing, and you're facing it together. And you're learning how to say hard things and to love somebody even when they're annoying, to be able to say things in a way that gets through to somebody instead of just waiting till you explode. So this work is so important, and that getting rid of that myth, which keeps us not only holding people to an impossible standard, but also not finding what we want because we think it has to be something mysterious and fairy tale-ish.
Yeah, that's really at the core is we're ro robbing ourselves of that discovery. And I say actually in this chapter that relationships are a mirror. They will illuminate your strengths, and they will also point out the areas that you need to work on. And I really have the mindset that we are always growing and evolving. Not everyone thinks the same way. But if you agree with that core belief, you can really use dating as an opportunity to know yourself better, and then ultimately relationships as an opportunity to know yourself better and to evolve into the greatest version of yourself. Because I feel like if you're just like, I'm done, this is who I am. And it's funny because, like, actually, my parents divorced when I was 17. And my mom very much has that fixed mindset of, like, this is how I am. This is, I'm not going to change. And that's it. She doesn't want to get married again. And she is single. She never remarried. And she is really comfortable with her life being the life that she's built and not needing to compromise any of that for another person. On the flip side, my dad is now on his third wife. But what I've seen in the last 10 years since he has been married to his third wife, I have seen him become a completely different person. And he has had to shift a lot of things about himself to sustain this relationship. And he's turning 80 this year. And so I feel like you always have the opportunity to shift and make a change. And, sometimes we feel like, oh, well, I already did that. That's already done. But when I see from people in their 60s, 70s, 80s that there is more to be experienced and there's more transformation available to them, I get really excited by that. So, maybe there's a third husband out there for some of your listeners. But just if there's a nugget of there's a nugget of hope. I love that your website acknowledges the hope. If there's a nugget of hope that there's more to be experienced and discovered, I think it's worth the journey.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that people who say, I'm done, are often just closing themselves off. They It's safer in many ways, but it's also lonely at times. Like my mom is 92 and was married twice. And after her second husband died, I got her up on J-Date. She was like, it was so funny working with her. She totally didn't get how it worked. And she went out with a couple of guys. She's like, oh my God, they're all so old. And I'm like, you're old too. And she doesn't think she's old. Now, maybe at 92, she's finally admitting that she's aging. She happens to look amazing and she's got a lot of energy for her age, but she wanted companionship more than anything. And I think people are really lonely. There's an epidemic out there of loneliness. And what do you have to lose by going out there and dating? And so do you have any other final words of advice for going on your last first date? I think what you just shared was so beautiful, but anything else that you have to share?
Well, as you were saying, there's so much in that discovery, and I think we put a lot of meaning on each of these dates, and like because of the fairy tale, we think it has to have a certain ending. And sometimes a date can just be a date. Sometimes a date can just be companionship, something to do. An opportunity to learn about ourselves, an opportunity to gain a new skill. I'm also like, let's stop with the dinner dates. We can do other things that are really that fuel our soul that we're excited to do. I always say, like, do a date that you would be happy to go on, even if the person's a dud, even if it's not a match, something that you would be like, well, that was fun. So if we can just adapt our mindset around dating and really design the dating future that's going to fuel our soul, it takes a lot of the pressure off and it makes the journey that much more exciting.
I love that. I have my clients taking themselves on dates because they put off everything for their dates to take them. And especially if they're just starting to work with me and they want to take a break from dating to kind of work on some of these skills, make a list of all the things you've been putting off and do them with a partner, do them with yourself. I think like fun dates could even be going to Goodwill and finding crazy things to dress up in and challenging each other, like really push the fun factor because, these coffee dates become so boring. It's two people who don't know each other just sitting across and trying to make conversation. And it could go well, but it could be a disaster. And, you could also limit how much time you spend with people, but that's a whole other story. Damona, I could talk to you for the next 5 hours, but we do have to end here. I would love for you to share how people can find you.
Well, you can find F the Fairy Tale wherever you get your books, or I think it's on sale on Amazon right now. So if you like a deal, go to Amazon and leave me a review once you read it. And then I'm on Instagram, Facebook, X, I guess they're calling it now, all the social medias at Damona Hoffman, at damonahoffman.com. And of course, on the Dates and Mates podcast, which I release new episodes every Tuesday for the last 11 years. So thank you for having me.
Fantastic, fantastic podcast, and you're wonderful. I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Same.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. If you love our show, please give us a high rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share it with your friends. And as always, here's to your last first date. If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.